available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site. On the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. Together, we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. We got some interesting stuff coming up today. We're going to talk to the publishers, the Arizona schools, and the Mountain schools about some of the changes in the offseason. Teams look a lot different than they did a couple months ago, David. Like,
they sure do.
A lot different.
They sure do. I'm particularly excited to talk about one of these teams. I'm not going to tell you which one.
Okay.
But there's one of them that I'm very excited about.
Awesome. So we're going to talk ASU, Arizona, Utah, and Colorado today. Just props to our network, because I love our Pac-12 network. Very strong. I sent out an email, or Dave and I jointly decided last night to send out an email.
Yes.
And they all responded.
Well, Brian asked me, what do you want to talk about today on the podcast? And I laid out this beautiful plan. Maybe we could structure it so that we talk to a third of the publishers tomorrow, then another third of them next week, and then the final third the following week. And Ryan was like, okay, I concur, but how do you want to go about getting it? And I was like, here, let me work out a plan, a communication plan. And it was amazing. It was beautiful the way it worked out.
What was the actual email you responded?
I mean, I responded with, what do you want to talk about tomorrow? And I said, Encanto.
Yeah. It's just like a show or a movie or something?
It's the latest Disney film.
Oh, okay. The latest Disney film. So that's what he wanted to talk about. I went a different route, and so I thought we could kind of dive into some of these off-season stuff. So I thought we could get all the teams at least touched on before spring football starts, and then we'll see what the coaching staffs are different, rosters are different. Some people are hitting the transfer portal hard. Really interested to talk about Arizona, because holy cow,
that's what I'm saying, man.
They're making some changes and stuff. But props to all the publishers, because they were super responsive. And we're excited to bring all of those to you today. If you want to get a hold of us, send us a question. It could be about, what was that Disney movie?
Encanto.
Incontinence.
Encanto.
Encanto.
It means enchantment.
Okay. Why don't they just call it that? There's probably like a lot of movies
because
called
because it's based, I think, in Colombia.
Oh, that's cool. So we got another like a...
Yeah.
We got some... It'd be more Latin flavor in the Disney film.
Oh, it's got a bunch of flavor to it. It's great. It's so here's what I would say about Encanto. I'm just going to give it a T up top.
Okay.
It's a trifle. It's minor. It's low key. It's not like... It's not a seminal experience like Frozen or Moana. It is what it is. It goes into its bucket. For what it is, it's very good. But it's not... You're not getting iconic villains here. You're not getting iconic characters. You're just getting... grounded, good family drama.
Okay. Speaking of Moana, I just got back from Hawaii. I was really hoping you could have made it out and could I get to hang with your boy, Brandon Huffman.
I know.
Greg Biggins.
So what the people don't know is it was very close. I had a flight booked to
You were
going
to go to Hawaii.
And then, life happened.
Right. So we didn't get to do a show. I said you were in your own personal transfer portal.
I constantly am, and nobody is biting. Nobody wants a piece of this.
All right. But if you want to get a hold of us, we got some questions again today. Pac-12podcast@gmail.com is the email address, or call or text us at 424-532-0678. You can tweet us at Pac-12podcast. The website where we put up the show is Pac-12podcast.com, and over on Reddit.com/r/podcastofchampions. Chat with other POC listeners and Pac-12 fans. If you got the Apple Podcasting app, please rate and follow us there. Leave us a 5-star review. We love that. Now you can do this on Spotify too. You can't leave a review, but you can leave a rating on Spotify. So I know a lot of our Android users are using Spotify. I use Spotify sometimes too, listen to stuff. So if you're on Spotify and you're listening to POC, leave us 5 stars there as well.
And then download Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. Don't be lazy.
Okay.
Ratings on both. What the hell?
Yeah, so I guess you can't do reviews on Spotify, but at least you can. They need to do that. Like I used to use the, when I had an Android, Google podcast, they didn't have a rating system either. So that's where Apple kind of nails it. I mean, they nail a lot of stuff, but.
Yeah. And also you don't have the stupid green bubbles when you text somebody.
Right. That's true. It is weird. Like now that I feel like now that I have it.
Yeah. iPhone, now do you have like the one family group text where like one person is still on like a Google phone?
Oh.
And it screws everything up for everyone. Like the pictures come in small for some reason.
Yes.
Like everything is awful.
My USCfootball.com staff, like Shotgun, has an Android. He's the only one.
He seems like an Android guy.
I was an Android guy for a long time too, but I got, you know, we got it now. You know what's cool though? I was on the plane, like on United.
You can iMessage
on
a plane.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's
free. What you can't do? Stupid green bubble shit.
You can't text. So you can only message other iPhone users. But if you have like Facebook Messenger or Instagram Messenger, you can use that too, but not. I think you can use those. But yeah, only iMessage. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
My iPad too, I can pull up, but it only messages on my iPad, doesn't have like cellular or whatever, you know, like, so I can only like, you know, iMessage on that one. So it's not like full text message. I don't know. It's weird. I'm figuring this stuff out.
Yeah, you're going for it.
All right. So that's cool stuff. So we're going to, you know, I think we should just get right into.
I think we should jump right in.
We're going to jump right
in. The water's fine.
So we're going to go one by one, talk to all four publishers from the mountain and desert schools, and then we'll take a break after that, and we'll get into questions. All right. First up in our tour of the mountain and desert schools, we have Jason Scheer, who's the publisher for Wildcat Authority, of course, covering the Arizona Wildcats. And both David and I, probably the most excited about talking about Arizona because, holy crap, it's like,
well, as you know, Jason and Ryan, I am the world's biggest Arizona football fan, have been for a long time.
Colorado?
Well, I wouldn't talk about Colorado. I mean, obviously, I haven't been a big Buffalo fan forever, but certainly a Wildcats fan, big Wildcats fan. So I'm going to start off with a really important question that's very related to football. Is Tubelis playing tonight?
They aren't saying a word. I have a feeling he may, but they are in complete lockdown mode.
Okay.
Nice.
Because I saw the line move. Did you see it go to minus three
and a half?
We're
not talking about basketball.
And then it went to minus two and a half. That's all I'm saying.
I know Jason and you would both like to talk, but this is a football podcast, and they're doing great things in football.
Yeah, unfortunately, this is a football podcast, so I have to talk about UCLA football occasionally. Jason, Arizona. What the hell, our man Jed Fish? Obviously recruiting like a terror out there. But what's the secret sauce? What's your impression of what he's been doing? Because I mean, just so everyone knows, if you haven't been paying attention, Arizona has a top 25 recruiting class for the first time in, is it literally ever?
It's, I think, Mike Stoops' second year. They were like 19.
Yeah, but it's freaky. I mean, transfer. He's winning transfer battles with like big time powers. He got a top, what is McMillan, top 50 yeah, recruit at wide receiver, who everybody wanted.
He could potentially be a five-star. Like they're literally talking about making him a five-star.
Yeah. I mean, this guy's he's somebody who could come in and play for literally anybody next year. He's going to Arizona. What's going on?
I've never seen anything like it, cause they were 1-11 last year. Like they're not fooling anyone, but Jed Fish has basically laid out a few things where, you know, he believes that they're headed in the right direction. You need players to do that. They've gotten a ton of support with the NIL. They've done a really, really nice job there. And then just overall, it's all about connections. Like with T-Mac, they never land him unless they get Noah Fifita, the quarterback from Servite. And so once they got Fifita, T-Mac, they had a chance, and they go and they get a couple other Servite kids who are friends, and it just kind of gains momentum there, and they've done what Sumlin didn't do and Rich Rod didn't do, which is basically camp out in Southern California and say, this is going to be where we recruit. And he's hired a bunch of recruiters at every position, and it's working. We'll have to see what happens on the field, but in terms of recruiting, I've never seen anything like it.
We've seen some different coaches get hired in this conference, and you know, when Fish was hired, some people were like, that's not going to work. And you're just meeting him, you know, just talking to him at Pac-12 Media Day. You're like, I don't know if they're going to win or not, but you knew he was going to create some buzz. And he gets an A+ for creating buzz. Obviously, 1-11 is not where you want. But, I mean, it just seems like this could be one of those huge turnarounds. We saw that at Baylor. Dave Aranda comes in, they struggle, and they, you know, they win the conference next year. I'm not saying Arizona's going to do that, but it just seems like he's built a whole bunch of momentum that, and people are, even with the 1-11 season, people are still bought in and ready to roll in, you know, be a bowl eligible team potentially in 2022.
Yeah. I mean, the running joke locally is that he's the best offseason coach of all time because
like, he crushed last offseason too.
Yeah. He crushed it. Like he gets out there and the media and does a great job. He's in the community. He's got people on Twitter following his every word. He's recruiting well, and there's definitely an excitement around Arizona football that there hasn't been in a while. And even the people that doubted him are started coming around, and it's not like the results are there on the field yet, but like you mentioned, the buzz surrounding Arizona football is awesome. Like there's actual excitement. Like all he did yesterday was he tweeted that he was headed recruiting and like tweeted a picture from a plane, and there's like a 100 post thread on the message board, like, where's Jeff Fish right now? And it's like, you know, someone could have done that, and Rich Rod could have done that and been like, oh, who cares where he is? But right. You know, there's just a lot of buzz around Fish, and he's done a fantastic job in the offseason.
So, like, my eyeball from, like, I watched a lot of Arizona this year, and then looking at who they've recruited, a lot of these dudes are going to play and probably play a lot this year. And so there's going to be some freshman lumps and everything. But obviously the talent has, I think in a single offseason, it has upgraded significantly. But where do you see still, I mean, obviously there's still going to be holes, but where's, like, the one or two most important positions where they still need to make significant upgrades to be that Pac-12 South potential contender?
I think the O-line kind of scares me a little bit. Donovan Lai, who a couple years ago was one of the better O-linemen in the conference, he suffered a bunch of concussions, and it's not really public yet, but he's retiring from football instead of playing his last season. So they're missing a guy that at one point was really good. They lost Josh McCauley, their starting center, to graduation. And so offensive line is probably a question. Now they're bringing in dudes, but as we know, starting a freshman offensive lineman is extremely difficult to do and expect them to play at a high level. And then D-line, they lose two starters from last season. So they've addressed the lines and they've brought in players, but we don't know how good those guys are until they reach the field. So I think that the other upgrades are guys that are going to play right away and be able to succeed, but it's on both lines where I kind of say, you know what, maybe they're kind of a year away and they need to keep addressing that and getting these guys stronger and bigger and all that.
Speaking of upgrades, Jaden Delora, like you could argue he was the best quarterback in the Pac-12 last year. He's in Arizona now. Like, is he the starter? Like, what's going on at quarterback?
Yeah, there's no competition. I mean,
you're not interested in more of the Will Plummer era?
Yeah. Anyone that watched Arizona at quarterback last year knows like it was bad. I mean, there's no way to sugarcoat it. It was bad. And you know, Noah Fifita was a big land for them. They like him quite a bit, but at the end of the day, he would be a freshman quarterback. And so for them to get Delora, they believe that he's going to make their offensive line better too, because a lot of times it was just the quarterback holding on to the ball. But all of a sudden, the upgrade of the wide receiver room, and they got a quarterback that's going to get him the ball. Like, they love Delora. He's the starter. The only drama now is who's the backup and who's going to transfer, because I assume one of those guys will transfer. But he's the guy where they actually kind of set it in motion. Like, they were recruiting some portal guys, but they were waiting for a few guys to, you know, maybe get pushed out by their current school. And Delora was one of them. And as soon as he hit the portal, it was pretty much over. They contacted him. They said, you know, Arizona's the place, laid out the NIL, have a few of his former teammates on the roster, and it moved pretty quickly.
The other kind of big note from the offseason were a couple of coaching changes. Don Brown left for what, being the head coach at UMass?
UMass, yeah.
Yeah. And Arizona went ahead and hired the two guys who recruited for UCLA last year, Johnny Nansen and Jason Kafusi.
Like, both guys, right? They had two guys that recruited, right?
Well, I'm going to give Jerry Neuheisel a little bit more credit than that. But yes, the two best recruiters on UCLA's staff, and two of the maybe three or four guys who actually recruited. To my eye, Johnny Nansen, obviously an upgrade as a recruiter over Don Brown. But Don Brown had a well-deserved reputation as a good defensive coordinator.
Is there any worry that there's a drop off there from an X's and O's standpoint? Because there were times last year where it wasn't working exactly, but you saw what Arizona was doing defensively and it made sense. And there were times where it actually looked, you know, pretty good for fits and starts there. What do you expect from Johnny Nansen?
Yeah, so Jed Fish basically took the approach where we could be the best coaches in the building, but if we don't have the talent, it doesn't matter, right? And so they hired Johnny Nansen and they for recruiting purposes mostly. And the fact that, I mean, he's already landed guys in 2023. He's going to land a bunch of guys. So they said, go out and make our team better. And Fish trusts them with the X's and O's a little bit. They love Don Brown. Don Brown is a really good coach. But he was also, you kind of hinted at it, he was stubborn. Like, they kept doing the same thing,
yeah.
Whether it worked or not, that was his defense. And it's going to be a little more flexible. So, like, Don Brown would, you know, the safeties would be getting killed, and Don Brown would just say, okay, we need to play better. And so there's going to be a little more adjusting, I think. I think Fish got frustrated with Don Brown a little bit. But, you know, Brown's, obviously, he's had success. He's now a head coach. So they might be missing on the X's and O's. But the hope is that they make up for it by bringing in better talent, which Nansen is clearly better than Don Brown at doing.
All right. That is our offseason report for
Arizona Wildcats.
With our boy Jason Shear. Follow him on Twitter at Jason Shear. Wildcat Authority. Great job, Jason. I'm really excited for you. When you get this kind of buzz in the offseason, there's nothing like it, you know. So I'm very happy for you. And thanks again for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, good stuff on Arizona. Let's go across the state to Tempe, Arizona State Sun Devils. We got Chris Cartman here. He does a great job at sundevilsource.com. Follow him on Twitter at sundevilsource. Chris, thanks for coming on, man.
Anytime for you guys. I mean, not so much you, Ryan, but David. Like, I'm really a big fan of David.
He's such the hard worker.
I mean, I carry this show, and I think everyone knows it, including Chris. He understands. He gets it. Chris. Just a casual question. Why hasn't Herm Edwards been fired yet?
Yeah, so I think ASU is going to allow the NCAA process to unfold before taking any additional action against staff members other than the three who were suspended with pay. As you guys know, Adam Brenneman, Chris Hawkins, and Prentice Gill, that happened last August. And really that happened because they had the most direct ability to implicate those three guys. And I think everything else was more, like they had needed to speak with a lot of people, interview the NCAA was going to have to do a lot of interviews with recruits and family members and ASU staff members, et cetera. And that process, well, it's the NCAA, right? So that process doesn't exactly go fast. I have heard, though, that they have started to interview some more people at ASU. And so I'm interested to see kind of how this unspools from here. It is a very serious case. Numerous people have told me that they expect ASU will self-sanction pretty aggressively this year to try to get ahead of it. And that will probably include a restriction on recruiting days and calls and how coaches on the road and official visits and maybe even the overall scholarship number and potentially even declining a bowl bid this season. And so when you look at that being the potential or the likely reality that they're working within, that of course makes it a lot harder for Herm Edwards to be successful at ASU. And so I don't know that it's inevitable. I wouldn't necessarily call it inevitable that he's going to be, that he will lose his job over this. I do think that he's going to have a hard time not ultimately losing his job one way or another as a result of this.
If there was a different AD or president in charge of the university or the athletic department right now, would Herm Edwards still have a job?
Probably not. There's no doubt that Ray Anderson being so close to Herm Edwards and having a pre-existing relationship that led to his decision to hire him now looks like very questionable in retrospect. Like, given everything that ASU is accused of doing and I think ultimately will be demonstrated to have done at least a lot of sort of NCAA rule breaking. That there's no way that you can look at that as anything other than a reflection on your administration's decisions, especially when you have Ray Anderson, when he fired Todd Graham, saying that the expectation at ASU was to be a regular top 15 team nationally and top three team in the Pac-12. I thought that was kind of preposterous at the time to set that out as the expectation that fans would have about your friend that you hired. Like, it didn't really make a lot of sense.
Did he mean top three in the Pac-12 South?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, right.
So, and by the way, like, no team has really done that.
No, except for Utah, maybe. Like, you could make an argument about Utah.
Not top 15 in the country.
No, but in the league, like top three for the last whatever. Yeah.
Sure. But to be both of those things, it was like a ridiculous ask, you know. And Ray Anderson is very close with Michael Crow, ASU's president, who I'm not entirely sure he either doesn't probably understand how you need to resource football to be successful, or he doesn't care, or some combination thereof. And probably just doesn't want to be embarrassed and wants to feel good about, you know, how everyone internally sort of views what they're trying to accomplish and their sort of broader mission of the athletic department, like in the whole Pac-12 Conference of Champions, blah, blah, blah. By the way, we can go into a whole thing about how ironical that it is that you guys have your podcast named what it is to the actual detriment of the most important sports that we all talk about every single day.
Yeah, it is irony. Yes.
We were talking about Olympic sports when we came up with it.
My God. So
Chris, so I've covered a team that had like a sort of lame duck head coach for multiple years. I don't know.
Oh, you have?
I have.
Which coach?
Yes.
How many times?
It's been a while, but I don't know if Herm's lame duck says, but when there's just all this uncertainty, you do see recruiting suffer. Like, we've saw USC's two of their worst recruiting classes ever in the last 3 years of Clay Helton's tenure. To see Arizona State 89th nationally, 11th in the Pac-12. And if you know, a little better when you include the transfer rankings, up to 66th nationally, but still 11th in the Pac-12. Is that all because of the uncertainty? Is it maybe it just was going to be a smaller class anyway, or what's the reason behind all that?
There's always several factors that all kind of intersect with that stuff. But when last summer, when all this stuff started to unfold in June, they really lost their ability to successfully recruit almost all the guys in the class that they were pursuing, because their coaches were suspended who were recruiting them. And a lot of them were the subject of what they are alleged to have done, which pretty much meant that they weren't going to be able to go to ASU. Yeah.
They like disassociate themselves at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like you can't like go then sign the guys, you know, if you were involved in sort of rule breaking around recruiting them. So, so that pretty much ensured that they were not going to be able to put together a very successful class, at least as I saw it. And then they did. We all know that the eligibility freeze from the 2020 season led to teams having a whole bunch of freshmen. And so when you have ASU had 43 scholarship freshmen or something like that, when you include second year guys, red shirts, et cetera. Well, why do you necessarily want to add a bunch of three-star recruits who aren't as good as guys you already have on campus when that's the case? Because they're going to end up in the transfer portal anyways. Like, you'll have 20 kids transfer in like a year or two. So it sort of made sense to me to sign a smaller class and then try to go hard in the transfer portal, especially when, you know, you call it lame duck. I don't know if it's lame duck, but it's certainly they're not really thinking that much about 4 years from now anymore, right? They're thinking about how they can win as many games right now to try to save their job. Well, that's not freshmen. That's plugging in spots where they lost guys. So I think they've taken 8. D1 transfers so far, and mostly it's in places where they need immediate help. They're losing 3 offensive line starters. They lost their top 2 running backs, one of their starting linebackers, their nose tackle, and they've basically filled all those spots. And they still need, on top of that, at least a few more guys between the secondary and wide receiver, and maybe even another offensive lineman.
Beyond the violations, beyond the recruiting, one thing that strikes me as like just a shockingly bad thing to witness in real time, and also like a bad harbinger for the program. Jaden Daniels has gotten worse every year he's been at ASU. Freshman year, I was ready to anoint him the chosen one. And then, you know, the second year, COVID, whatever, things get weird, but it was, you know, a downturn from the first year. And then last year, he was actively a bottom half quarterback in the league, something like that. His yards per attempt went way down. He's thrown a ton more picks. What's the story there? Because I know the offense changed from his freshman year to his sophomore year with Zach Hill coming in, but what's going on there? And is there a way to arrest that slide and get him back on the trajectory that he looked to be on from his freshman year?
Yeah. So I think first a very slight quibble. 2020, they played four games, and they, you know, you're adjusting to a new offensive coordinator. Like they had all of their skill position guys were like pretty much new. So I think that was very difficult circumstances. And I think that he didn't necessarily take a step forward that year, but I wouldn't say that he regressed, but this past season, he significantly regressed. And, again, there were several factors, but none more pronounced than a very clear disconnect between Zach Hill and Jaden Daniels. Like those guys were not on the same page at all. I don't believe, to the point where I almost would say that there was like a real lack of trust and confidence in what they were trying to do and how. Zach Hill, more than any coach I've ever seen as a coordinator at the college level, he would change whether he was on the field or in the press box on a game-to-game basis. He did it like six times last year. And that was because they were trying to find some sort of a rhythm or chemistry or relationship basis that they could sort of build from. And Trey Anderson, who was coaching quarterbacks sort of on an interim basis last year, and is a lot younger, it seems to have a better connection with Daniels, but maybe that's because he doesn't tell Daniels things that are critical. And I think Zach Hill needed to learn a lot from that experience with Daniels, because when you go back to like the BYU game and they changed how they were signaling plays, and ASU had the most number of procedural penalties and other mistakes I've ever seen in a Pac-12 game. And I don't think Hill was like prepared to understand like what those challenges would be and how to sort of build up Daniels from a confidence and execution standpoint. It was like, hey, here's kind of how we're doing it, and here's how I do it, and you're going to have to fit into this box that I want you to be as a quarterback. But then Daniels, perhaps recognizing that this was the way that Hill was, he sort of rebelled against that to almost like, I'm going to do what I want to do. And that just was that utterly failed. There was many games when I'm watching from the press box and I'm saying he's not going through the right progression reads. Like there's guys open, but he's neglecting that because he wants to go with his instinctual thing or whatever, or he has no confidence in the blocking is going to hold up, so he's running prematurely, all these kinds of things. He had a lot of breakdowns with his accuracy because he wasn't, his throwing mechanics were not, you know, being adhered to from what he had been doing a year or two earlier. And then ASU missed a bunch of throws down the field as a result of that, big play opportunities, and where he didn't see them. So there's a lot of areas where he needs to get significantly better. But I think more than anything, he has to look in the mirror and acknowledge the flaws and limitations as they actually are, and then work to sort of build up, you know. And I don't know. I don't know if you guys are going to ask me this or not, but they just added Brian Billick as an advisor. And just the fact that he was an offensive coordinator before becoming a head coach in college and the NFL and has won a Super Bowl, I think that may help as a sounding board and as someone else who sort of echoes what Hill is saying, but also can make sure that Hill is adjusting in the way that can benefit Daniels. I'm interested to see if that changes the dynamic at all.
And Paul Tyson too, coming in, Bear Bryant's like great grandson, right? I don't know.
If yeah. He could maybe push Daniels. Yeah, I think ultimately they probably did that because they're not happy with their quarterback depth and their overall situation projecting to 2023. And so it's better to have somebody who is learning your system and is ready to hit the ground running when it's his time. But pushing Daniels is that would benefit everyone, I think.
Yeah. All right, that's our off-season report for
Arizona State Sun Devils.
With our buddy, our pal, Chris Cartman. We thought it'd be like 5 minutes, but we could have talked a whole long time about Arizona State.
We could have gone an hour because Ryan and I are experts on when it is necessary to fire a coach because of the teams we cover. And so we're just kind of curious about ASU because this is past time when you would typically fire a coach. So it's interesting.
I'm just like spooked out. Was that like the Grim Reaper coming for ASU's coaching staff with the little sound there, sound effects?
Oh, that's hold on, I'll do it again.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
that's our Sun Devil.
Yeah, that's our standard sound, but I guess it's okay. Maybe a little more apropos for the Grim Reaping. Well, anyway, Chris, thanks so much for coming on. Check out sundevilsource.com for more. Thanks, man.
No problem. You did pretty good, Ryan.
thank you, Chris.
All right. Well, those were the Arizona schools, the desert schools. Let's go to the mountains. Love the mountains. You're a big skier, David.
I mean, I've skied. I wouldn't describe myself as a big skier.
Me neither, but I'm sure our buddy Dan Sorensen is a big skier. We got to talk about Utah Utes. They went to the Rose Bowl. I don't know if you know that the first time.
Yeah. Did you go?
I didn't go to this one.
Are you sure?
I did go to the Pac-12 championship game, so that was kind of cool. Utah was well represented, but you go to utezone.com. He's the publisher over there. Follow him on Twitter at D Sorensen. Dan, thanks for coming on and talking some Utah football.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I've got just a very simple opinion question to begin the show. Cam Rising starts from game one, comfortable and ready for BYU and San Diego State. Is Utah a playoff team?
I don't know if they're a playoff team, but I don't think that they lose to BYU or San Diego State, to be honest.
Maybe.
Yeah, that really was kind of the inflection point of the season was Rising going in and getting his his feet wet and really driving the team to success. But you know, that Oregon State loss, you know, something like that, if it wasn't the Oregon State loss, it would have been something else. So I don't think Utah's a playoff team, but certainly they make the Pac-12 look better by not having those out of conference losses and then going on that long run to win the conference title.
We talked to Arizona, who is doing better in recruiting than kind of a typical Arizona year. Arizona State doing worse than a typical year, probably about average, I guess, for Utah, 37th nationally right now, third in the Pac-12. And if you include the transfers, 35th nationally and down fifth in the Pac-12. But this is a team that doesn't lose a lot. Is that kind of where you expect recruiting rankings and transfer rankings to be for the Utes right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's a typical recruiting season for Utah, you know, and Greg Biggins, he said it the other day when he was doing his recap from the Polynesian Bowl, that Utah consistently makes 24/7 look bad because of how they outperform how these guys are ranked. And so you look at Utah's recruiting class, you know, across the board, and Lander Barton is, you know, he's a local kid. His parents both were athletes at the University of Utah. He's got two older brothers that played for the Utes and are both in the NFL now. And, you know, and then he went, of course, to the All-American game and you know, was one of the top performers in the game. And so he's the headliner of the class. And then you got a four-star quarterback in Nate Johnson out of the Fresno area. And then you got a bunch of really highly rated three-star kids. And if we've seen anything out of Kyle Whittingham over the last decade, is he can take a mid-level to highly rated three-star kid and really help them accomplish that potential and you know, make the talent evaluators look bad. So, you know, Utah being there at you know, third in the recruiting rankings in the conference, 37th nationally, is about where you'd expect them to be. I expect the performance on the field, because Utah is so good at developing talent, the performance on the field should be higher than what those numbers say. And that's a good expectation. You know, the coaching staff, when they go out and they recruit, You know, they've got their formula. It's obviously led to success. They finally got that conference championship to even prove that even more so. But they're one of the winningest programs in the conference, and they have been for a while. And you know, they did a good job in identifying what their needs were, what they knew was going to leave at the end of the season, and then just backfilling. So, you know, they're at a point where, you know, it's going to be – you're not going to see a lot of reloading seasons from the Utes. They're going to be consistently good. They're not going to necessarily be, you know, conference championship contenders every year, but they're going to be consistently good. And I think that this class is going to be just adding to that cumulative effect.
And I have a favorite player in this recruiting class, Keo Akana from Honolulu, because our mutual friend Brandon Huffman has known his dad, Brandon, I guess, for several years. We were at the Polynesian Bowl. One day we have North Shore practice up there at BYU Hawaii, and Brandon invites us over to his house, the backyard on the North Shore, and does this crazy barbecue with us. So he's my favorite recruit of all time now. That meal was so good from Brandon's dad, so it was pretty awesome.
I don't blame you at all. I've never been more jealous of you than I am right at this very moment. Right?
You're telling me. He's been talking about this Hawaiian lunch like four times since I saw him.
But we'll be watching KO the whole time. So go KO. That was great.
Yeah. Love it.
So Utah is justifiably a trendy pick to win the Pac-12 next year. I think in some of these way too early rankings, they're as high as top six for 2022 for good reason with everybody returning. But a huge through line that I've heard kind of just rumblings about throughout last season, and especially like right after the Rose Bowl, right during the Rose Bowl, is that Kyle Whittingham was, you know, there was talk that he might retire, might move on. Is there anything to that right now? Because it strikes me that he would want to stay and see how maybe his best team ever actually performs on the field next year.
Yeah, there was a lot of buzz. I don't know where that buzz came. Well, I kind of know where that buzz came from. You know, obviously, it's been a tough 2 years for this Utah football program. The fact that they lost two players to shootings, you know, just it's so rare to see a death of a player. I think that, but I've covered, I think, four of them in the last 20 years at Utah and two in the last year. And that weighed heavily. So when you had the two deaths, the loss to BYU, things, you know, just felt a little off early in the season for this team until, you know, Cam Rising comes in and shows leadership and the team gets galvanized and they move forward to that conference championship. But it looked like things were weighing pretty heavily on Coach Whittingham earlier in the season. That obviously changed as things went on, and you know, winning cures everything, right? And that's the case for every program. You know, I'd be surprised if we saw him hang him up. You know, he's been out recruiting. He's making commitments to recruits, and I know that that's a common thing that's said about lots of coaches, and coaches, you know, why and or circumstances change. And so that doesn't necessarily mean he's sticking around, but he's certainly not acting right now like somebody that plans on hanging them up for a while. I think he's still got some gas in the tank. I think that he knows that, you know, he's got a loaded team next year and, you know, and maybe the year after. And I think you're right. There is some justification in saying, you know, well, okay, you know, we finally got over the hump. We won the Pac-12 title, but you know, we'd love to win a Rose Bowl. We'd love to get into the playoffs. We'd love to win a national championship. And, you know, and I don't know if a national championship is a realistic goal for the Utes, but it's certainly one they're going to have and they're going to shoot for. And he's got the quarterback in place. He's got a star running back coming back. He's going to have a good receiving core. His two star tight ends are coming back. The offense is going to be really, really good. And yes, they lose Devin Lloyd and they lose a little bit off of that defensive line and the linebacking core, but the entire secondary is coming back and they should be good. And the D line is going to be good once again. And the defense has a chance to be a Utah defense and reload. And so they've got a great chance to do some special things next year. And then of course they kick it off on the national stage with a game against Florida in game one in the Swamp. And so if they can win that game, there's going to be a lot of national buzz about the Utes all season long. So, you know, I, knowing how he is and how he wants to compete and what he's built and how he wants to see things through, you know, I can't imagine a scenario unless he's, his health takes a major downturn. I can't imagine a scenario where he's not back next year and to seeing what he can accomplish.
Season number 18 as the head coach. You talked about the stability there. When I sent you an email before the show, most of the schools have a bunch of guys that have transferred out. He's like, you know, Dan's line was no significant transfers. Like, so you got some guys at NFL, you know, Britton Covey's going, you mentioned Devin Lloyd and some of the other guys. Utah did go hard in the transfer portal last year. Any big additions in the transfer portal so far? We know they haven't lost a lot of guys, but any new additions?
Really, they've only got three transfers coming in so far that have committed. You know, they've got the big one is Mahmoud Diabate, who's a four-star transfer out of Florida. Started a bunch of games down in Florida. He can play linebacker. He can be an edge rusher. He's a 6'3" guy. He's a long guy. So you know, he's a guy that can come in and really help mitigate some of the loss of a guy like Devin Lloyd or a guy like Mika Tafua, who of course led the Pac-12 in sacks last year, and both of them are going on to the NFL. Other than that, they got a couple of tight end transfers, Landon Morris out of Syracuse and Logan Kendall out of Idaho. And, you know, a tight end transfer out of Idaho doesn't get a lot of people excited, but I watch his film and he plays like a rhinoceros. So, you know, as an old school football guy, I kind of love him. I don't know what he's going to do on the field, but, you know, he's going to hit a few people and I think fans are going to love him for it. But yeah, beyond that, Utah hasn't been terribly active in the transfer portal. I do expect people to transfer out. I do think that a lot of the players are waiting for spring football to see how things play out. But, you know, there are guys that, you know, they're not going to like where they're at on the depth chart. They're going to want to see if they can get an opportunity somewhere to play. And so we'll see transfers out and then we'll see them backfill. But I don't think that we're going to see a lot of activity until after spring football. You know, they're going to go out, they're going to look for another free safety. They're going to look for another cornerback, maybe another linebacker, although that linebacker room is loaded with really young talent. And frankly, it's weird to say for Utah, but it's got a bunch of four-star kids that they recruited out of high school that is in that linebacker room. So I think that they're good there and they'll roll with the youth that they've got. But I think that they'll be really selective in the transfers they bring in, maybe a wide receiver. But I personally don't expect a lot of movement until after spring ball when the roster kind of shakes out a little bit more.
All right. That is our offseason report for
Utah Utes.
Dan, really appreciate you coming on. Make sure you guys check out utezone.com. Of course, Utah likely going to be the favorite in the Pac-12 again. But it was cool to see this team kind of shine at the end of the season. But Dan, thanks so much again for coming on.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Dan.
All right. Go from Utah, Salt Lake City, over to Boulder, Colorado. Our friend, one of my favorites, David, Adam Munster Tiger, does a great job over at BuffStampede.com and covering Colorado for a long time. We go way, way back. But Adam, thanks again for coming on and talking about the Buffs.
Of course. Yeah. I usually have you guys in my ear when I'm doing yard work. And so I'm always grateful to get a call to come on with you guys.
Yeah. And, you know, it's always fun to talk to you. I would say always fun to talk about the Carl Durrell experience, but here we are and we're immersed in it. I, of course, have the perspective of a UCLA person from his first tenure. I think there was a lot of hope coming out of 2020 with how Colorado performed that year. This past year was obviously a lot uglier. What's the prospectus right now for the next year for Colorado based on kind of what you saw last year, the coaching changes that have been made, you know, the recruiting class put together?
Yeah, we've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly here since Carl Durrell took over in February of 2020. And I don't know. I think this is going to be the first year I don't make a win prediction because you look at the schedule and it's hard to see a lot of wins on there. And you've got 22 guys that have entered the transfer portal since the beginning of the season. Most of those guys obviously entering the portal after this season. A lot of that was good attrition, but you know, there's been some guys that were key parts of this team that was already lacking depth. And so there's a lot of pressure on this coaching staff to try to fill those gaps through the portal. And they have brought a few guys in, but they're going to have to do some work recruiting that portal once that next wave of guys comes in there following spring ball. So it's kind of hard to say. I do like the staff hires generally that he made this offseason. I think offensive coordinator is a little bit of a question mark with Mike Sanford. He was a guy that was one of the hot young assistants in college football, but in 2 years at Minnesota, they really struggled in the passing game aspect of it, and he got let go. And so there's a big question mark there. The good thing for Colorado is their offense can't get worse. I mean, in terms of the quarterback play and the offensive line play that we saw this past season, there's only one way to go, and that's up. Will they get better enough to where, you know, they're actually winning football games? It's hard to say at this point, but a lot of question marks with this program. You know, Brennan Rice is going to USC. Mekhi Blackman's going to USC. You lost Jarek Broussard. You know, the 2020 Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Year. You lost Mark Perry, a guy that was pretty inconsistent at safety the last couple of years, but was starting to develop. You had put a lot of time and effort into trying to develop this guy that you know, was starting to make some plays, and now he's going to TCU. And so a lot of defections within this program. And so it's hard to say. I'm an optimistic person by nature, but certainly covering Colorado the last 15 years, that's been tested a lot.
Yeah. I love Chris Wilson. You know, he was great when he was over at USC. We'll see how he does his second year as DC, but the Mike Sanford hire, it's kind of the question we want. When we, you know, people are looking at this Colorado offense at times, you're like, can the offense get to triple digits of yards? You know, like crossing the 100-yard marker was like questionable at some point. And I feel like you really needed to just crush this hire and to get the guy that was fired at Minnesota. Maybe it works out. And like you said, it's hard to get worse, but I mean, was there any thought or, you know, just going out and getting some young guy that's putting up 500 yards a game somewhere and seeing what you could do with him?
Yeah. Well, I think Carl Durrell, this is the type of offense coordinator that he wants. He wants to have kind of a ball control offense that is predicated mainly on the running game. And, you know, he's a former receiver. They're going to throw the ball some, but I think this was the type of hire that he wanted, that he can kind of mesh with Mike Sanford more. Whereas with Darren Cheverini, it was kind of, you know, oil and vinegar type of thing. Like Cheverini came from the air raid, and that's not Carl Durrell's background at all. There was a day there where there was some reports that Brennan Marion, who was at Pittsburgh and now is at Texas as their passing game coordinator, was a candidate for the offensive coordinator job. And that would have been exciting. That would have been like a boom or bust type of thing. It, you know, could have failed miserably, but at least it would have been something innovative and something exciting. I think with Mike Sanford coming in there, that is the big question. I like so many of the hires that they made this offseason, but I just don't know where the ceiling is with his offense, with him as the offense coordinator. You look at his past and some of these offenses that he's taken over have gotten worse with him in charge. So certainly, you know, questionable decision, but you know, this will probably be the hire that defines the Carl Durrell era, I think, whether or not Mike Sanford is successful in that offensive coordinator role.
Yeah. And that was, that's the worry for me, because my hope, when Carl Durrell was hired, because I truly did hope he succeeded, was that he would have, changed this particular leopard would have changed his spots a little bit. But this hire, it strikes me as leaning into his comfort zone offensively, which I have always been possessed of the belief that Carl Durrell's comfort zone on offense is the reason he continuously fails, as a head coach, but also as an offensive coordinator. It's just not a good offense. He doesn't have a good feel for it. And he's, I think just not very good at it. And I think he has this belief, in it based off of, I don't know, his time with Shanahan or whatever. But it's outdated. And I'm interested to see if Mike Sanford maybe has changed a little bit, because he's a relatively young guy. He was the hot name coming out of Notre Dame, took the Western Kentucky job, did not kill it. And Western Kentucky is a job that you can kill if you're really good. So it's interesting to see that. With the kind of departures, there was a big name that came in that I was hoping you could shed some light on. Tommy Brown, the offensive lineman from Alabama, just recently committed to Colorado. How big of a pickup is that, and how much does that, bolster that offensive line for next year?
Yeah, it helps a lot. I think you put him in as a starter in Penn at this point, just because had you watched any Colorado games this past season, you know how bad the offensive line was. And this is a guy that started a game for Alabama last year. It was kind of a utility guy, can play tackle and guard, and was a guy that Alabama didn't really want to lose. And yeah, he wasn't starting every game, but the guys that were starting in front of him are off to the NFL. So they hope he is, you know, what Max Ray didn't end up being, a guy that transferred in from Ohio State last year and got a bad head injury early in the season and then had to medically retire. So I do think Tommy Brown is going to be a big part of this offense. And the more guys you can put in that locker room too, that have that winning culture. They brought in Robert Barnes from Oklahoma last offseason and Jack Lamb from Notre Dame. And those guys became leaders pretty early on. And I think for Colorado, as many of those guys as you can get in that locker room, that's a big deal. RJ Sneed, a transfer from Baylor at receiver, is a big get for them as well. He led Baylor in receiving in 2020, was second on the team in receiving this past year. So that helps mitigate a little bit the loss of Brendan Rice and Dimitri Stanley to the portal. But like I said earlier, they got to keep working that portal, because they've still got some spots at running back and safety that they've got to fill. That the team you're going to see out there in spring ball is not necessarily going to be the starting group you're going to see out there, because they're going to need some more guys from the portal.
Speaking of the portal, pick up a guy from Houston, a quarterback. What's the quarterback room looking like right now?
Yeah, JT Schrout was going to be their starter in 2021 until he tore his ACL in the preseason, and he's made good recovery. He's going to be participating some during spring ball. I think if you're putting odds on who's going to be the starting quarterback this year, he would be at the top of the list. Brendan Lewis did get better as last season went along, but not as good as they needed him to, and as quickly. His development was not as quick as they needed it to be, and a lot of that had to do with the offensive line that was in front of him. I think it would have been hard for even Schrout to have success in the offense last year, because they were really struggling as an offensive line group. So I wouldn't count out Brendan Lewis. There were stretches in games, at Oregon. There was a handful of stretches throughout the year where you go, okay, I see why he was as highly regarded as he was coming out of high school, but just didn't have the consistency. He's started a lot of football games now. So I think he's going to be in the mix. Maddox Kopp, as you mentioned, transferred in from Houston. It's hard to say, he hasn't completed his first practice at Colorado, but he's definitely got that prototype body, 6'4", 215. He was an Elite 11 finalist. So he'll be part of that mix as well. Drew Carter was in the program last year, but as bad as Brendan Lewis was playing at times, they didn't really play him much. So that kind of tells you that he's further along in his development than, probably being part of the conversation as being a starter. So I would probably put him maybe third or fourth on that hierarchy. But I would expect JT Schrout to be the guy. He transferred in from Tennessee last year and was looking pretty darn good in the few open practices we had before he ended up getting hurt.
One last thing. You mentioned 22 departures. It's a lot, guys leaving the transfer portal. You're bringing in some guys in, but anyone, the school's pretty much, starting now. Maybe the next wave is going to be after spring. Is the thought there's going to be a lot of guys added in that spring, heading into summer for the Buffs?
Yeah, the number I had heard initially from sources was that they expected to bring in 7 transfers, and they brought in 4. I think that number will actually go up, just because I think there's been more defections to the portal than maybe people anticipated that was going to happen. So I would say they probably bring in about 5 transfers after that next group hits the portal after spring ball. The deadline for enrolling for the spring semester has passed. So they got who they have right now, and they're not really going to be able to add much until later in the spring.
All right. That is our off-season report for
Colorado Buffalo.
Always a pleasure talking to our buddy, Adam Munstertiger. Go check out buffstampede.com. Adam, thanks again for coming on.
Of course, guys. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Adam.
Wow, David. I mean, did we execute? Like, we pulled something off.
I mean, I think it's a testament to the planning from me last night and how we pulled that off. But we just got 4 quality interviews.
Yeah.
I would say some of them were even kind of like dropping a little bit of news tidbits. Like, there was information.
Yeah.
There was analysis. We didn't sound too stupid. I think it was great.
I mean, 5 probably stars. Sounded stupid, but that's okay.
We didn't sound too stupid.
Okay.
right? Like, I mean, there's a baseline level of stupid that everyone's expecting here, but we didn't sound too stupid.
Yeah, a couple of them were telling us, like, they listen to the show, you know?
Yeah,
so that's,
yeah, yeah.
They're happy to be on it.
Chris Cartman very obviously does not listen to the show.
I don't think he does.
Because he didn't know the sound effect.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He didn't know the sound effect, yeah.
Yeah, but our man's Dan and Adam, they're listeners.
They like us in the mountains.
They like us in the mountains.
I don't know, Jason.
I didn't get a feel.
I'm not sure if Jason likes us or not. Not that he doesn't like us, but just listens to the show.
I mean, I think he loves us, like, at a fundamental level, like a deep spiritual level, but...
But, yeah, that was good stuff. So, you know, I know everyone out there, you're not used to actual information on this podcast, so... We'll get back to Disney princesses some other time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, this was probably really harsh for you. Like, it was like you were thrust into an atmosphere that you can't quite breathe. Mm. But we'll be back to nothing but shit soon. you will get your dose of methane very soon.
Is there any other, like, sort of Pac-12 level stuff? Anything that happened that's weird? Because we already talked about, like, Chip Kelly's extension. We're still on Caleb Williams watch. We don't know what he's doing.
Are we on watch?
I have to be.
Yeah.
Every time they tweet out these emojis and stuff, I get
it's happening.
50 texts and everything.
Whatever. USC's recruiting is no longer whelming. It's now, I would say, overwhelming.
I think we have a question about that.
Do we really?
Yeah. They're number one in the transfer market.
Yeah. It's gross. it sucks real bad.
It's sort of like... the emperor comes in and they tell all the workers to redouble their efforts to build the Death Star. It gets built faster than you even thought. Is that sort of what's going on?
But then it does get blown up.
That's true.
Remember?
Yeah.
Remember that part?
by a bunch of
fucking tiny teddy bears. Remember that?
Isn't it like you come up with this one theme, right, in Star Wars? Like, okay, the first movie, we're going to make 9 of them. The first one, holy cow, we have something that can blow up a planet. Like, what does you do after that? Well, we do another thing that can blow up at the planet. Then you can have it in like a ship. Like a ship can blow up a planet. So now we have like thousands of ships and each one of them can blow up a planet. Soon you'll have like a holstered gun that you could just blow up planets with. Like that'll be the next Star Wars is like, yes.
If J.J. Abrams does have anything to say about it, that is what it will be.
Yeah.
And it will be so every successive Star Wars movie done by J.J. Abrams will be the worst movie of all time.
Wow.
He cannot do anymore.
Okay, are they gonna make more or what's?
They're gonna make more. I mean, it's too much money, but that last one was.
I didn't remember the storyline from the last.
There wasn't one. It was. Whew.
But I told David I watched this on the plane because he made a reference to it being like the worst movie. Was that on air? No, that wasn't on air.
No,
right?
That was off air.
So I don't remember if we were talking about it on air or not. But then I was like, I had to watch it on the plane. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm like, okay, so you have like a fleet of ships and all of them can blow up planets. Like,
yeah.
So yeah, there's just like. You just get this thing in your head, like,
yeah, you remove
planet blowing up thing.
Well, it's like you remove all of the like impact of that by just making it everything. It's just stupid.
Yeah.
It's just dumb. It's bad story.
And it's weird where, like, you know, planet's pretty big, right? Like, I mean, Earth is pretty big. Like,
if you just dropped off
on Earth somewhere, like, you could be in Antarctica, you could be somewhere like the middle of Europe, you could be like Brazil, I don't know. But just people land on planets, there's like one city section or something that just goes to. Like the whole rest of the planet, there's nothing. Like, I went to this planet, I just stopped by. Like, oh yeah.
Well, that was the thing with all those movies is that they made the new ones, they made the universe feel small. And like, that's the entire opposite of the point of those stupid movies.
Yeah.
Like, it's not supposed to feel small. It's supposed to feel lived in. Like, it's supposed to feel kind of grungy and like there are different areas and it's all kind of... But it felt like there were like 150 people in this entire universe and they were constantly bumping into each other doing stupid crap.
It's like you live in New York City and you might not bump into your neighbor for like years.
Right.
And like there's like this million light years all over the world. Like we just bump into each other at a random Tatooine
bar. no sense of like the distance between things. Like what's the distance between that planet they blow up with the what's the stupid
Alderaan?
Name? What's this in Force Awakens? What's the name of the stupid supervillain weapon?
Oh, I forget.
Like, it's like Star Killer or some crap.
Okay, sure.
Anyway, where is that in relation to the planet it's blowing up? Because like in Star Wars, the original movie, you've got the whole scene of the Death Star arriving in the galaxy and it's slowly emerging to blow up.
It has to like clear the moon to blow up.
Yeah, but you've got all this like sense of like okay, time and space and like distance and all this other stuff, and like there's a sense of like. okay, this needs to happen now because we got to get this done. It, none of those movies had it. Like, Force Awakens is a piece of trash, and then Rise of Skywalker is absolutely abysmal. Just a terrible movie.
I love we just went on this random tangent, like, right, you know.
Well, we're not going to talk about USC football anymore. I'm not sure. Doing that.
Oh, yeah, that's how we got there. Okay, why don't we take a quick break? We do have some questions to get to. So thanks to all of our guests. Back in a minute, and we're answering your questions.
You hear that? Your dog knows. Spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of pet meds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy, knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
All righty. We're back here on the podcast of Champions. We have a voicemail. I think it's specifically for you, David. We can start with that.
Sure.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Perk. Yeah, I know Hitler Day has kind of the monopoly on asking questions about assistant coach hires, particularly on the offensive line and tight end positions. But I just wanted to ask Dave what his thoughts were on the UCLA O-line coach that recently moved out to Ohio State. I think Justin Fry's his name. Just, you know, out here at Ohio State, everyone's been kind of complaining about the offensive line the past few years. So I was wondering if you knew anything on kind of what to expect from him, if he's more of a recruiter, less of a developer, or on the other side, more of a developer, less of a recruiter, or I guess kind of just a hybrid. But I just wanted to know, you know, if you knew anything on him. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, good question. Perk, Justin Fry was probably the best assistant coach on staff. He was a great developer of talent. The offensive line just seemed to constantly produce guys who could really play. He converted a defensive lineman, Antonio Maffei, into a really playable guard this year, and he'll probably start next year. But just real Alec Anderson, UCLA's right tackle, just declared for the draft. He wasn't really playable his first year. Justin Fry did a lot of work on him, turned him into a top flight tackle in the Pac-12. He's a really, really good developer of talent on the offensive line. As a recruiter, he's fine. He's not great. I think with a different head coach in charge who maybe prioritizes recruiting, he could be galvanized a little bit more to do it. I think in a lot of ways, assistant coaches follow the lead of their head coach, and Chip Kelly's not a recruiter. I don't know Ryan Day that well, but given Ohio State's recruiting rankings, he's probably a recruiter. Mm-hmm. And I think Justin Fry will do fine. But he's a really good developer of talent. And I think he'd drawn pretty good reviews for just as like a offensive game plan type guy. He wasn't the play caller. That was Chip Kelly, but he did a lot of work on the game plans and scouting and all that kind of stuff. So I think he'll be an asset to that Ohio State staff. I don't know who your offensive line coach it was, but I think he'll probably be an upgrade if people are unhappy with him. Fry was, I think, the guy on staff that everyone was pretty damn high on from a fan perspective, from an internal perspective.
Does UCLA still have some open jobs?
Yeah, they do. So
is it getting a little late?
The big one is defensive coordinator. Who are they going to replace?
Oh, is that an important job?
Yeah. Is it, you know, maybe the difference between what they're is a good team and what's a bad team? Maybe.
I mean, for a team that recruits, like, it would be important to get one before signing day. But for UCLA, it doesn't matter, right? Signing day is just true. What every day. It's
true.
It's the same.
So they're taking their time on it. But yeah, that's kind of the big missing piece at this point.
Gotcha. We had an email from Crispy Bruin. Hey, guys. Hate the podcast. Well, that's nice, Crispy. That's good. That wasn't the whole question, but that was just the funny part. With the number of quarterbacks transferring into the conference, are there any Pac-12 schools who aren't upgrading their quarterback play next year? Obviously, other than Jaden Daniels year over year at ASU.
Okay, so let's go through it. Let's go through it. ASU, no.
So ASU brought in a transfer, but it's still Jaden Daniels
starting. Yeah. Jaden Delora, obviously, yes. Yeah,
Arizona for sure.
UCLA, yes, just because Dorian Thompson-Robinson will be a year older and he's developed back every year.
USC's, we don't know, like, because you still don't know about Caleb
Williams.
Yes,
we do.
I mean,
don't be coy.
If I knew he was coming, I would say, like, people are reporting, oh, he's coming. Like, I don't know. I haven't heard that he's coming. Like, he probably
will. USC's upgrading its recruiting class upgrading its quarterback class because Caleb Williams is going. Utah, they're just Cam Rising.
It's Cam Rising, so I don't know about the upgrade. Yeah.
Whatever. Colorado, sure, because it won't just be Brendan Lewis.
Yeah.
I think.
His Shroud will be off injury.
What's Cal doing?
I don't know.
Didn't Chase Garber's.
He's
gone.
Left. Yeah, he's gone.
Maybe we should.
Maybe Ethan Garber's will go there. Isn't that what we were talking about before?
Wow.
Isn't that what. I thought that was the talk.
No, he's at UCLA. He already used the transfer portal.
Yeah, well, you could use it again.
I don't think you can.
I mean, you could, like, apply for a waiver or something.
Oh, whatever. What? Yeah. So he can go be the quarterback at the school his brother left?
Yeah.
All right, what's Cal doing? Cal, they have Jack Plummer in the transfer portal.
Okay.
I don't know who that is. He's from Purdue.
Oh, yeah, okay.
All right, well, we definitely need to do the Bay Area schools next because we have no friggin' idea.
Tanner McKee is...
He's good, but I don't know if it's a significant upgrade. It's just him again.
Right. I wouldn't say that's an upgrade kind of thing.
What's Oregon doing?
Oregon has...
They had Thompson.
No, they brought in Bo Nix.
Okay. Is that an upgrade? I've watched Bo Nix play football. Is that an upgrade?
I don't know. And you got the kid that was freshman last year, Thompson, right? Yeah. So, I don't know, but They've tried.
They've tried to. I don't know if that's
Anthony Brown is
not good.
And I really thought he was going to be good, and he wasn't. That was one of my things. I'm like, I think Anthony Brown's going to, like, surprise people and be good. And, like, well, I was wrong.
Yeah.
I'm better at predicting death than life. I'm good with the Stanford is butt, and Colorado will be terrible, and Arizona will win one game. I was good at all those, but.
So, Oregon State, did they do anything, or is it just still the Chance Nolan show?
I think Chance Nolan, but then I thought they had a transfer also. Like, there was someone that was going to, like...
We were so well prepared for this question. Like, we're nailing it.
Well, we nailed the four people we just talked to because we just talked to them.
Yeah, it's tough when they ask us, like, a bunch of stuff, you know? Like, are we supposed to be experts on this conference that we cover exclusively on this podcast?
No.
Come on. Did they get somebody? They got Travis Throckmorton, who definitely wins the all-name team, but that's a freshman.
Yeah.
I don't see anybody in the transfer portal they got.
Washington State, they brought in, so they lose Delora, but they brought in Cameron.
I'm calling that flat. I get the whole, like, hype about an FCS quarterback.
Cameron Ward, yeah.
But come on. You're ditching maybe the best quarterback in the league last year.
Okay.
Washington, it's not still Dylan Morris, is it?
They brought in somebody too, I think, didn't they? it's hard to remember. They're like, okay, so
roster turnover sucks so bad now because it's really hard to.
There's a lot of roster turnover, and like,
dude, we got to cover Washington because what is going on here? They have two enrollees, three signed letters of intent, and five transfers.
Mm.
What the hell's going on up there, Kalen?
I don't. Yeah, because, well, Kalen DeBoer, you thought they were going to get
Jake Haener.
Yeah.
And then they didn't.
Yeah, Jeff so that Hedford was sort of back. Like, yeah.
Okay, well, anyway, some schools upgraded, some didn't. There you go.
Yeah.
Crispy Bruin.
Nice, Crispy.
Glad you hate the podcast.
Here's a couple good. First, for the, I think the ratio of like jokes to words in his email was pretty high.
It was really high. All right. This is from Casey. Oh, Casey in Rancho Cucamonga.
Ryan really dealt me a
fun one here. This is a POC reaction to January 13th show. Just treat collegiate athletes like all other students. Hi, Ryan and Dave. First time, long time here. Love what you guys do for Pac-12 fans and keep up the good work. And by good work, I mean little work you put into this. Thursday, you touched on something that's a pet peeve of mine, our double standard for collegiate athletes and what going to school means with respect to them. Nowhere in the college landscape is it a requirement that an undergraduate student double major. That is, except for collegiate athletes, and that's exactly the case. I'm going to start calling them college athletes because collegiate is bothering me every time I say it.
Okay.
Because it's then making me pronounce athletes wrong.
Is it?
I'm going collegiate athletes.
Okay.
So I'm going to go college athletes. And that's exactly the case when you look at the sports regimen they follow and then add their additional studies on top of that. As someone who spent time in a performing arts major during undergrad, I see little difference between the daily demand of a D1 athlete and that of someone majoring in music, dance, theater, etc. Students in these examples spend dawn to dusk in group or individual practice being coached by experts in their field. The only difference is we don't make music majors also achieve another separate degree in business, media relations, etc. In my opinion, many parties are to blame for this denigration of sports on campus. Of course, the NCAA is at the top of the list as always and has done this to preserve the myth of amateurism, but there are also forces on campus that would hate to see athletes gain any more power or budget from the university. For those departments, though, how many are capable of producing the number of graduates immediately earning seven-figure salaries as D1 revenue-producing athletes? That's not athletics. That should just be athletes. Yeah. Why is it? Again, it screwed me up.
It was wrong on the email, to be fair.
College athletes.
Producing athletics.
Many will argue that not all college athletes go pro in sports after college. Not a lot of people go pro in what they majored in general. But at least those kids have a diploma. Cool. Give college athletes a diploma without making them do twice the work.
This is so fun.
But accrediting organizations have to be certified. That's how you know the diplomas are meaningful. One, LOL. Two, imagine an NCAA that actually did work like this to support college athletes instead of constantly figuring out how to reintroduce indentured servitude. As I step down off my soapbox, let me close with the infamous words of Cardale Jones. We ain't come to play school. Words that were mocked at the time but ring truer than ever today. Not because sports and college athletes don't have a place on campus, but because they are more important to universities now than ever. Thanks, guys, and looking forward to a great offseason listening to you review Apple TV shows and beg for 5-star reviews. Casey, really good, really well-reasoned. I think it's dead on. I think athletics should be essentially the same as, I mean, why wouldn't it be, as performing arts majors? The real fundamental thing, and I think you've hit the nail on the head, is people don't respect it, first, as a profession, and two, I think it's the fact that they get so much money. Like, I think so many of them get so much money for being professional athletes. But why can't there be I had a number of friends who were like world arts and culture majors. Now, some of them are using it to be poor and not do anything, and some of them are not. But like, that's the degree they graduated with. How is it fundamentally different than getting like a physical education degree or whatever?
Yeah.
I like that. I would like to see it explored at a more extensive level because I do think there is this like inherent and essential bias against athletics as essentially a chosen professional field. But these aren't supposed to be trade schools anyway. So if you're allowing it for performing arts or visual arts or any of those sorts of things that are essentially trades, but we're treating it as if it's not, why can't you do it for athletics too?
No, I think that's great. And then you could, I mean, you're studying, like say you're not going to make it to the NFL or whatever. You could be a coach. You could be, you know, they teach you fundamentals of coaching or, you know, just physical education, like things that are based on athletics. And maybe you're not doing a whole lot of math. You're doing more of, you know, this kind of stuff.
Right.
And if you wanted to have more of a science-based thing, they're like kinesiology, whatever, like you could be a trainer or any of the things, you know, that kind of stuff. I think it should be a part of it. And that might save college athletics eventually, just being able to do something like this.
Well, and it is a double major. You could make that a very robust major too, because I think there's a lot of psychology that goes into athletics. There's a lot of, obviously, biology that goes into athletics. There's a lot of nutrition that goes into athletics. There's a lot of stuff that, like, I think even for like a hardcore academic institution, there is value in teaching those courses even as a general education thing, like even as something that people pick up who are majoring in something else. Like, it's not as if this would be just purely siloed for athletes. Like, you could do, I think, something that's actually worthwhile for people who are participating in sports. But, like, I think for the people who are participating in sports, that part of it should be part of their academics.
Yeah.
Like, it shouldn't just be, oh, you have to do this job on top of – it's not like work study. I mean, they have to spend a shitload of time devoted to basketball or football or any of the other sports. So why not make that part of their academics? And yeah, there's a couple of classes they also have to take to, you know, integrate into the school environment or whatever, but it's related to what they're doing.
Yeah. I would, you know, and I'm curious too, if there's, you know, there's athletes that are there that really don't want to be a part of school. They'll go to the tutoring, they'll do what they have to do. And, you know, maybe they're not into it, but like, I don't want to take that calculus class or whatever it is, or that physics class. Oh, but this is like a kinesiology class or like something that was having to do with, you know, sports nutrition or sports psychology. Maybe they weren't interested in school, but they would be interested in that. And they're like, oh, I'm actually going to go to this class. And you might get people motivated to do more on the academic side.
Rather than dumping a bunch of guys who or whoever into history or whatever when like – they don't want to learn about
– why'd you mention history?
But, like, I was a history major. But, like, I was a history major, and I was in, like, some of these, like, big-time feeder classes with, like, 20 football players. And it's like, why do they have to dump into history? Like, it's not as if they're like, oh, yeah, I'm really into history. It's because it's the easiest goddamn major at UCLA. And but, like, I'm not even – yeah, exactly. But, like, I'm not even, like, knocking that as, like, a reason to do it because you've got a friggin' full-time job.
Yeah.
What major are you going to take? You're not going to be like, I mean, there's the ones who like, who try to be like Altron Werner was like an applied mathematics major. And I'm like, good on you, buddy. But like, how are you finding the time?
Yeah.
I can't find the time between all the drinking. So how do you find the time?
It is tough. Cause there, I mean, obviously there's a wide range of students that play sports, but there's guys that are like, I really wanted to do this engineering discipline, but like, I can't, like, there's not enough time, you know?
Right. And
so, yeah.
Yeah, it's tricky. I think it's but I think it's a good idea to allow that as an option for guys who want it.
Yeah. All right. This email from Carson is called Doug is Stupid.
Wow.
We have to remember what Doug said. To Doug's point, I love how people just assume they know exactly what you're talking about. This could have been from a year ago. It's probably from the last show. I'm guessing it's from the last show. But it could have been from 6 months ago.
But who can remember what we said in the last show?
That was like 2 weeks ago anyway. But so... Doug, at some point, made a point. But to Doug's point about if one Pac-12 team in the 12/16 playoff setup would stand a better chance against four SEC teams in the playoffs than one Pac-12 team in the Final Four would against one or two SEC teams.
First, there would be a lot more than four SEC teams in a 12/16 playoff.
Okay.
Anyway. So
Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State are the three teams in the country that Utah would not beat. Other than that, I think Utah could probably beat anyone else. Yes, that includes Cincinnati, Michigan, Baylor, Oklahoma State, just like BYU, Wazoo, Oklahoma State, Michigan State, and a few others. I'm not remembering right now. Michigan, the inferior team in their rivalry, benefited from playing Ohio State in the year of the rivalry upset. So basically,
I'm sorry. You're calling Doug stupid.
He did mention BYU who lost to Utah.
You're arguing with points like Michigan benefited from playing Ohio State in the year of the rivalry upsets. Is that objective reality that has any influence on the outcome of a football game? It's the year of the rivalry upsets.
When I think of 2021, I don't think like pandemic. I think rivalry upsets. That's all I thought about.
Anyway, continue.
So basically, I would project the Final Four to include Alabama, Georgia, one of Ohio State/Michigan/Baylor/Oklahoma State, and then Utah. Because I don't think Cincy lasts long enough against higher level competition in the expanded playoff format. Same thing with Michigan, Baylor, Oklahoma State, etc. Also, if USC, Oregon, or Washington can get their shit together with their new coaches, I think those three, plus Utah, would have a pretty good chance of getting at least two, maybe three teams into the top 12 or 16 over the next few years. So we should absolutely push for an expanded playoff format. I think it means you are brain dead.
It's always fun when it's the closing like insult, and then they use the wrong "your" to say that you're brain dead.
You are brain dead if you don't want an expanded playoff with your interest being in the Pac-12. That's from Carson.
Here's the thing, Carson, my buddy, my pal, is that if USC, Oregon, and Washington can get their shit together with their new coaches, guess what? You don't need an expanded playoff. No deserving Pac-12 team has been left out of the four-team playoff. The issue is, constantly, correctly, no Pac-12 team has been deserving for the last five friggin' years. Utah doesn't lose to San Diego State and BYU. Guess what? They probably make the playoff this year.
I would think they're in. I would think they would have made it.
They probably make the playoff this year.
The way they were
You know what it. The problem with Utah this year is, Carson? Your coach started the wrong quarterback for the first three games of the year. That's your problem. And if that gets fixed, then maybe you go to the playoff this year. These things are internal issues with the Pac-12. It doesn't get solved by expanding it to 12, because expanding it to 12 the last, I don't know, few years, probably gets one team in, one Pac-12 team, into a 12-team playoff, when more than likely that's going to be five SEC teams, three or four Big Ten teams. You're not increasing your chances, really.
But you're getting a chance.
You're getting a chance, but right. You're also increasing the share for the other leagues.
Right. You have a lottery ticket, at least.
You've got a lottery ticket, but guess what? Every team has a lottery ticket at the beginning of the season.
Yeah. I really despise the playoff expansion talk at this point. I mean, obviously, the Pac-12 needs to expand. I love the people like Dave just fighting against it and stuff. Like, it's just like, it's going to happen. It actually might not, when you listen to the national podcast, like, it might take 4 or 5 years, so you might get your way. It'll eventually expand, but
yeah,
the ACC is totally like, they don't want to expand and stuff, so it's kind of weird. Well, they want Notre Dame to, the ACC has like a terrible TV contract, and like the only way to get out of it is you add Notre Dame, and if you add to make it 12, you don't need to add Notre Dame, so that's kind of where they are, I think.
Word. True or false, this is a text message. Landanning and Oregon will be to college football next year what Tommy Lloyd and Arizona have been to college basketball this year. No. False.
I do. Okay. I appreciate the Landanning, though.
It was good. It was good. What about? I've got one for you. What about Lamitoid?
I like that Lamitoid.
Lamitoid's pretty good.
Did you see what's going on with like Hawaii? Like,
yeah.
I was out there for the. So June Jones, I mean, cool dude. It was cool to see like Doug Williams, like a freaking legend, coaching one of the teams there. But June Jones is out there and like really just openly talking about, yeah, I'd take the Hawaii job. That'd be cool. You know, it's like, yeah, you should hire him. Like, Hawaii's like, you don't even have a stadium. Like, it's so weird. You know, they had to condemn the stadium that you were playing in. And apparently they told them, like, yeah, you could be the coach, but you only get like 2 years and we get to pick your staff. And it's just like, what? What are you doing? So they got Timmy Chang, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he gets to be the Hawaii coach. Because the Pac-12 usually plays those teams. All right, this is our buddy John and Brea. Finally, dear Ryan and Dave, I spent the last 15 years searching the Pac-12 landscape, looking for a team I can support and call my own. A team I can funnel NIL money to so that I can be tied to a program whose success will ultimately give my life some sort of meaning. But it's been a tough road. So he has a few choices here. He said, my Arizona State Sun Devils haven't been the same since Sparky's costume went plush. Oh, and the entire athletic administration went insane. My USC Trojans are once again trying to break in an offensive-minded coach, thinking this one, finally, will return the program to the glory days. We'll see. My UCLA Bruins started last year so strong, and I was eight clapping my way through every shopping mall in the valley until week three. But finally, like a true oasis in the desert, my Arizona Wildcats are poised to take over the Pac-12. I lived in Tucson for 6 years, about a mile from the university. Tucson is a college town disguised as a mid-sized city. Everything in Tucson revolves around the U of A. Combine this rabid fan base with the state of Arizona's politics, and you have the most SEC-like school in the Pac-12. It's time. What do you think? Arizona going to be that team? David, his question was, of all the University of Arizona games you've seen, which one is the most memorable? Bear down, John and Brea.
I love John.
He's awesome.
He's moving on again. It's great.
He picked another school, yeah.
It's very good. Man, so like snark aside, Arizona's doing some things.
Oh, yeah.
Like if they can stack a few top 30-ish classes in a row, and if they can see meaningful results this year, like are we returning to early 90s era Arizona? Maybe.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Why not?
No? Yes? Sure. Sure.
I mean, they won a game. Like, his question about most memorable game, like, it probably has to be the win over Cal, right? Like, How memorable was that? Like 10-7?
Oh, it was a big game.
I mean, that was memorable. I mean, there were some awesome 90s games and stuff, but yeah. Well, we love you, John. Thanks.
John sent us a really vulgar image.
Oh, my gosh.
Says, we got our man, and it's Chip Kelly's face superimposed on the back of some woman's head who is sitting on a football.
She has a large posterior or whatever.
Yeah, it's...
And it says it's ESPN Radio breaking, not just ESPN breaking news. It's ESPN Radio breaking news.
It's an interesting image.
It's
like
it's an image, but it says radio.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there. I'm going to go ahead and read the next one.
Okay.
Pac-12 quarterbacks. This is from Phil in Pullman. Hello, Ryan and David. This year was clearly a down year for the Pac-12, but I think we can all agree that the quarterback play this year was also terrible when the league typically produces good quarterbacks. With this in mind, I made a list of quarterbacks that I want you to rank from worst to best. I know some of these guys did not play all year, but they all had a considerable amount of snaps in at least one game. Here is the list. 1, Gunnar Cruz. 2, Brendan Lewis. 3, Dylan Morris. 4, Jack West. 5, Jarrett Guarantano. 6, Charlie Brewer. 7, Will Plummer. Also, I wanted to mention that I think Stanford will be much better than they were this year. They may have been, but, quote, this year. But I bet Shaw will right the ship, and I think McKee is an underrated QB that you guys don't talk about enough. With a top 25 recruiting class as well, I think there's a lot to look forward to in this team. Call it a hot take, but if they don't go at least 6-6, I'll create a bunch of fake accounts and post 5-star reviews for as long as you'd like. Anyways, thank you for what you guys do, and look forward to hearing your thoughts. Best.
Hey, Phil. I got to look and see. You know, they did have a great recruiting class, but there's more guys still leaving the portal. So I think you can plug some holes, but man, it just still seems like once you get those guys on board, they're like jumping ship.
Phil, they're going to be big ass again this year. Big ass.
Like with that picture of the last email we got.
Correct.
My guess would be they're not going to get to 6-6, but you know, we'll see, Phil, if
crazier things have happened. Looking at their schedule, basically they have Colgate this year, which helps. That's a win. But other than that, the non-conference is not going to give them any respite. Mm-hmm. So then ranking these terrible quarterbacks.
Holy cow. Like what? They're so bad. And to the other point about the Pac-12, like when we're talking about like, hey, who was the stud quarterback in the Pac-12? It wasn't like, was Justin Herbert better than like, no, it was like, is Jaden Delora the best quarterback? Is.
Okay. So we got to rank these.
How?
I'm going Dylan Morris is the number one in that group. And he wasn't good.
Could you go Will Plummer had some moments.
I mean, Will Plummer's definitely top half in this group, but. So, all right. So, I'm going Dylan Morris.
Was Dylan Morris's he catered some, like, it was just, these just terrible.
He was really, really bad. Charlie Brewer was bad, but he wasn't, like, the worst quarterback in history of the league. So, he's top half, too. I think it goes like this. I think it's Dylan Morris, Will Plummer.
Brewer?
Charlie Brewer. And then... Like, do we drop all the way down to Brendan Lewis then? I think it's Brendan Lewis. Then I think it is Jarrett Guarantano. Then it's the Jack West Gunnar Cruz face-off.
Yeah. I think you go Cruz and West is the worst.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think that's a big reason why Stanford was butt.
Yes.
Just because, like, you had McKee.
And then nothing.
And you picked... West over him. Man.
How did they do that?
That's a really tough list.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Because they're like, these are all Pac-12 quarterbacks, by the way. Like we have a list of 7 quarterbacks that we can't decide who is worth a damn out of.
Yeah.
And they all played. That's bad. All right, we got one last one. This is a text message, and it's a question for David. Is he merely, quote, whelmed with USC's transfer portal recruiting, or is, quote, overwhelmed now? Keep up the good work, fellas. TK from Orange County.
I am indeed now overwhelmed.
Okay.
And it's only going to get worse. I don't like it. Picking up basically every meaningful interconference transfer, like just loading up on the worst teams in the league's best players or friggin' Oregon's best running back. Frankly, Travis Dye was better than CJ Ferdell every year. Can we finally have that conversation, everyone?
Okay.
He was better than CJ Verdell every single year. He He's going to thrive in that offense. Mm-hmm. He's going to be friggin' great in that offense. Brandon Rice. Is it Brendan or Brandon?
Brendan Rice. Yeah.
He's a stud. Athletic, really good. Austin Jones, he's good. Like they're.
Was just, Austin Jones the best running back Stanford had, or did they have a better? Well, there was
probably the best, but I think he was hurt last year, like okay. a little bit. Anyway, it's not good. They're going to get Caleb Williams, and that's not good. It's not fun. It's not enjoyable to watch this happen. I don't like it.
How do you feel about this?
I think it's bad. I think it's bad. I don't like it. So they suddenly have a top 12 recruiting class, guys. Do you remember when it was in like
they
the
signed 8 players?
Do you remember when it was in the 70s and we were all laughing?
It was over 100. It was like 100.
Do you remember that? Do you remember that, everyone? They're top 12 now when you factor in the transfers. It's not good. And they're going to get Caleb Williams, and then it's going to be top 10.
Yeah.
It's not good. We don't like it.
We'll see. We'll see what happens. But that was a really good show. I think maybe we'll give a little heads up early. We'll try to get the Pacific Northwest schools maybe next week. And if we can't get some of them can't do it, we'll probably do the California schools. But two next shows, Pacific Northwest and California in some order. And if you had some specific questions, you know, send them in for those programs. If we see them early enough, we can try to ask the various experts about that. But I like this one, David. Did you have a good time?
It was a great show. I laughed. I cried. I felt something tingle.
I think you cried at the end a little.
I did.
With the whelmed.
Yeah. I cried. I cried quite a bit. That was a big whine.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that'll wrap it up. For David Woods, I am Ryan Abraham. Thank you so much for tuning in to the podcast of champions. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.